every day is so wonderful, and suddenly it's hard to breathe. Now and then I get insecure from all the pain. I'm so
welcome everyone to the A Bold Scientist Under the Shower, the science radio show broadcast every second Monday of the month on Radio Onda Italiana and Radio Salto here in Amsterdam. Tonight is a very special episode, not only because I have two guests here in front of me, but because the youngest scientists I ever interviewed. Yes, indeed. In fact, tonight, two students from the Faculty of Psychology and Neuroscience at the University of Maastricht will talk about their research. But let's start from the beginning by welcoming them with... actually, we already somehow welcome them with this such a beautiful song. Actually, it's the 20th year anniversary of this beautiful song, Beautiful, from by Christina Aguilera. Therefore, here I have my beautiful guests. Hi, Marie. Hi, Ellen. How are you doing?
Hi. Good. Yeah, it's my first time being interviewed on a radio show, I can tell you that.
So. That's nice. I mean, it will get better. No worries. Hi, Marie.
Hello. Thank you for having us.
Yeah, I mean, it's my pleasure. as already told you. So just let's chit chat, and let's I mean, tell us a little bit about yourself, where you're from, and what's your age, and I mean, your hobbies, whatever. I mean, whatever you want to tell us about yourself. Ellen.
I will start off then. So, hi, I'm Ellen ten Berg, or ten Berge in Dutch, because it's a Dutch last name, but impossible to pronounce. So I'm half Danish and half Dutch.
Didn't know that.
Yeah, I'm 23. Both Marie and I are in our third year of our bachelor. And
so, yeah, what's your just out of curiosity? Because it's actually also the question I always ask to my guest. Was studying psychology, or, I mean, eventually becoming a psychologist, was your childhood dream? Oh, I mean, you want to do something else. It just happened to study psychology.
No, originally, actually, I never really knew until I was like 14 or 15. And then suddenly it just became a huge interest of mine because my cousin had ASD, or has ASD, so autism spectrum disorder. So I got really interested in it because of that. And then after school, I took two gap years, and now I'm at Maastricht. So,
Good for us, because otherwise we wouldn't have you as a guest. Such a beautiful radio show. Marie, what about you?
Hi, I'm Marie Pallenkämper. I'm 24 years old, and I'm from Germany. And I would say I've also never really had psychology as my childhood dream. I've always been really interested in how things work. So I guess that's where my interest comes from, more into the research direction. And as a kid, I used to collect all these little worms from the garden and then look them up into these children biology books. But
and kill them eventually, or not?
No, I freed them back.
Okay, it's good for them. Yeah. And so therefore, you have this inclination for research, I mean, or experimenting in general, not necessarily to see how things work in the psychology realm.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, when you're young, you don't really know about psychology, I guess. So that comes...
Actually, you don't know about anything.
Yeah, right. But yeah, I guess then after school, I did some internships, and then I got really interested in psychology as well.
So no regrets then from neither of you?
Not at all.
Nope.
That's good to hear. So I think the first thing that any person that is listening to this radio is wondering is how is possible that those young students are already some kind of involved in research and science? How comes?
So because our university is actually very much research-based, we in our second year had the chance to do a research practical, which lasted a couple of months, where we had the chance to figure out what we wanted to do, set up an experiment, carry out an experiment, and write a whole research paper, and then eventually present about it at the end. And this is very unusual. I haven't heard of any other universities doing this in any case. Amazing experience.
Yeah, and I mean, amazing coordinator of the course as well, right?
Absolutely. Thank you, Francesco.
Yeah, I'm actually the coordinator of this course. It's called Indeed Research Practical. It lasts for 3 months. 3 months. Yeah. It's also quite unusual, indeed, for a course at our university. And so from this year, it's the first year I'm coordinating this course. I thought that would be a nice experience for students to present the research during this radio show. Of course, we couldn't invite each of the 46 research that have been performed during these 3 months, but we have chosen the two best projects. Actually, the one that we are here, the representatives of the project that have been judged as the best one. So first of all, I would like to congratulate you guys for such an accomplishment. And also, I mean, I would like to congratulate you once again to be here, because I know as a scientist, but also as a science communicator, that is probably the most difficult thing is to explain to a not expert audience what science is about and what a scientific research is. So therefore, I think, I mean, you did a good job in preparing for today. I'm sure that you will do a great job in explaining what your research are about. Okay, so also from Marie, some inputs about the research practical. What do you think was difficult? Was sometimes frustrating? Was exciting? So what was your experience?
So overall for me, it was a super positive experience. First of all, it was a bit messy because we had to agree with all the different group members on one topic and one method and how we wanted to do it. And that took some time, but once we got started, it was really nice to put all the things we've learned before into practice. And of course, there were also a lot of things I didn't expect. For example, all the administrative stuff that goes into the research. But of course, it was also nice that we could do it and also see a little bit the downside, at least for me.
No, but that's what is, I mean, what is also part of the goal of the course, right? To see somehow the frustration that scientists can get through, and also the all the process, as you mentioned correctly, all the administrative part, and you guys manage to deliver some result in only 3 months. There are scientists that that can take 3 years or more to run an experiment, to write a paper about it. Congratulations again for that. Ellen, what was your experience?
Same as Marie, very chaotic. Ethical approval was a very difficult process. Didn't know it was going to be that difficult, but...
I mean, the ethical approval was also one of the steps indeed, because, I mean, every experiment has to be ethically approved first before be able to run an experiment. So that's probably what Marie was referring in terms of administrative downsides. All right, so after this nice introduction, I don't know, probably we will go on, just to make it a little bit more alive, we'll go on with another song, which I think will nicely introduce the Ellen research topic and Ellen research in general. Actually, I'm proud to say that the next song is from an Italian band called Maneskin. Am I correct that Maneskin is a Danish word?
It is. It's actually pronounced Måneskin.
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 Måneskin. Okay.
Yeah.
Do you speak the language?
I do, yeah.
Okay, nice. So the Måneskin with sounds more Russian, though. With Coraline, and Ellen will explain you very briefly why she have been choosing this song. All right, enjoy.
Dimmi la tua verità, Coraline, Coraline, 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 Coraline bella come il sole, corriera dal cuore zelante, capelli come rose rosse, preziosi quei fili di rame, amore portali da me. Se senti campane cantare, vedrai Coraline che piange, prende il dolore degli altri e poi lo porta dentro lei. Coraline, Coraline, dimmi le tue verità. Coraline, Coraline, dimmi le tue verità. Coraline, Coraline, dimmi le tue verità. Coraline, Coraline, però lei sa la verità. Non è per tutti andare avanti con il cuore che è diviso in due metà. Freddo già, è una bambina però sente come un peso e prima o poi si spezzerà e la gente dirà non vale niente, non riesce neanche a uscire da una misera porta, ma un giorno una volta lei ci riuscirà. Che può crescere, prendere le sue cose e poi partire. Ma sento un mostro che la tiene in gabbia, che le ricopre la strada di mine. Ho detto a Coraline che può crescere, prendere le sue cose e poi partire. Ma Coraline non vuole mangiare, no. Sì, Coraline vorrebbe sparire. E Coraline piange, Coraline all'ansia, Coraline vuole il mare ma paura dell'acqua. E forse il mare è dentro di lei. E ogni parola è un'ascia, un taglio sulla schiena, come una zattera che naviga in un fiume in piena. E forse il fiume è dentro di lei. Capirò cosa hai dentro e sarò l'acqua da bere, il significato del bene, sarò anche un soldato o la luce di sera. Coraline, Coraline, dimmi le tue verità. Coraline, Coraline, dimmi le tue verità. Coraline, Coraline, dimmi le tue verità. Coraline, Coraline, Coraline bella come il sole. Ha perso il frutto del suo ventre, non ha conosciuto l'amore. Ma un padre che ti padrà niente, le han detto in città c'è un castello con mura talmente potenti che se ci va a vivere dentro non potrà colpirti più niente, non potrà colpirti più niente.
Yeah, welcome back to the Able Scientist and the Shower. This was Coraline by Måneskin. So this song we are here with Marie and Ellen. So why, Ellen, have you chosen this this song?
So this song has a bit of a link to the research me and my group. There were 8 of us, or 9 of us in total, we carried out. slightly linking to eating disorders. And specifically, this song is about mental health struggles of the girlfriend of the main singer, and one of those was an eating disorder. And
yeah,
that's
indeed,
how it all came together.
Indeed, yeah, there is indeed a part that is saying that she cannot even manage to go out from their place for her place, and there is a monster in, so if she feels like there is a monster in her house, or she cannot even manage to eat, indeed, and then is the link with the eating disorder issue. So then eating disorder, Ellen.
Yes, so our research was slightly linked to eating disorders. So to basically define it, it's usually a very severe mental illness where a patient has extreme disturbances with eating behaviors and thoughts about food and self-image. They're often very, very closely related. And one of the key symptoms of specifically anorexia, which is the very restrictive type, leading to low body weight, is self-control, which links very nicely to one of the main areas of interest of our research, which was the prefrontal cortex of the brain.
So when you say area, you say the an area of the brain.
Exactly.
Of the brain. Yeah.
Yes. So to kind of give an idea of where it is in the brain, it's at the very front, essentially right behind your forehead. It's a very important area for like difficult higher functions such as attention, emotional processing, planning, self-control. People sometimes give the metaphor of a control center, but it has more purposes than that. It's important to mention that it's not just one single thing. And in relation to anorexia, of course, self-control is a huge aspect of that. But the prefrontal cortex, which I will sometimes abbreviate with as PFC, important to mention that as well quickly, is the role, is that the PFC plays a large role in social behavior as well, which also links to eating disorder behaviors. Especially in a modern day, we often are exposed to social media. This has led to an increase in eating disorders. And because the prefrontal cortex plays a role in the social behavior, we wanted to kind of investigate how images of the body ideal that we took from social media influencers affected the activity in the prefrontal cortex. So yeah, our research question was kind of two different ones. So whether the prefrontal cortex involved in body image was related to food as well. You'll see in a second how this relates. And then also whether it was different for people with a higher inclination towards eating disorder behavior.
Yeah, wonderful. Great. So therefore, for what you explained us, there couldn't be another region of interest than the PFC, because it seems really to be a perfect fit with your research question. All right, so how did you, that's the first question that did come up in my mind. How did you manage to investigate the role of PFC in terms of perception of body image and food? So how was possible to do that?
So the setup of the experiment was a bit complex. It was an amazing chance that our group had to work with a form of brain imaging, which is very rare that we would have that ability as second year students. But our supervisor was a PhD candidate with expertise in brain imaging.
Yeah.
So we were able to use a device called FNIRS, which stands for functional near infrared spectroscopy. That's very complex. Essentially, it's like a little cap that you put on your head if you've ever had an EEG done or had a swimming cap on. It's essentially little what's called optodes, attached to it, which send out light signals into the brain, and it can measure the amount of oxygen. Okay, quickly back to brain activity. When there's higher brain activity somewhere, the brain needs more blood. So we can determine whether there's higher activity if there's more blood, which has to carry oxygen to the specific areas. So these optodes, they can measure the amount of blood, essentially, and therefore the amount of activity. So that's how we measured specifically the brain activity. We then also had some other aspects of the experiment. So since we also wanted to look at how much of an inclination towards eating disorder behaviors our participants had, we used something that's called the EAT. So it's the Eating Attitudes Test, which consists of 26 questions that measures essentially how much eating disorder behavior you show. So some examples that would be, one of the questions would be, I avoid eating when I'm hungry, or I find myself preoccupied with food. And then you rate on a scale how much you relate to that question. And so the higher your score on this test, the increase, the more severe or the more likely you are to have an eating disorder. Okay. So we tested this in our participants as well.
Okay, so let me summarize a bit the ingredients. So you actually measure the activity of your region of interest, namely the prefrontal cortex, using FNIRS. That's a very interesting method, actually, imaging method, which is also quite new and quite convenient, because me, being a neuroscientist, I know a little bit about that, because it's quite mobile, so it's very easy to use. Then you measure the prefrontal cortex activity with FNIRS, and then you actually divide the group of subjects in two groups, right? One that have kind of low inclination towards eating disorder, and the other one that has a more high inclination to eating disorder. But that one ingredient is missing, right? So how did you test this relationship, the sensitivity to the PFC, of PFC to the relationship between body image and food?
Yes, so this was the last part of the experiment. So the groups, again, were split up even more. So first, people were either shown some really boring images of like offices or buildings, but the other group was shown images of the ideal body that we then took from social media, as I might have mentioned earlier. Okay, great. And then after this, we showed everyone the same images of food. So these were food that people usually consider unhealthy. So like pizza, chips, etc., burgers, whatever. During all this, we obviously measured brain activity and found some very interesting results.
All right. So basically, you then compare the same exactly picture of food, but in two different contexts. In one context, the subject were exposed to just neutral images like office, or I remember an island kind of environment, naturalistic environment. I remember during the presentation, it was also on a beautiful island. But anyway, yeah. Neutral figure, pictures. And then another group was presented with ideal body image. Can you make an example? So there were model, female model, male and female models?
Yes. So dependent on the gender of the participant, we had either a set of images with the male body ideal or the female body ideal. So the female body ideal was usually just slim figured, a little bit curvy women.
Yeah. For example. Cool. And then you compare the activity between these two groups, the one who the one that were shown the food in one context versus the other. And what did you find, Ellen?
So when we looked at the brain activity during the food image presentation, we saw that there was a big difference in brain activity when you'd either been shown body images or neutral images. And there was also a difference in the desirability rating, which we also measured. Both of these had significant effects, but when we looked even further and also took the eating disorder scale score into it, we saw that the higher the score there, combined with the body ideal images, even more of a difference in brain activity was discovered. So you were even more sensitive to the context of the body ideal when reacting to food.
So then it seems that really the PFC, as you expected, the PFC is, I mean, the center region for the relationship between body image and food. And I mean, even further, as you correctly mentioned, for people with some eating disorder inclination.
Yes, exactly. We didn't go too much in depth about specifically why and which function of the prefrontal cortex was involved, because that's very, very difficult to do, especially with this software. So,
especially in 3 months.
Especially in 3 months, yeah.
So this looks very, very interesting. What is the next step? What is the future? If someone like in a big lab would like to use your result, what he has to do next? What do you think is the future of such a type of research?
Well, because we found this sensitivity in people with a higher eating disorder score on the scale, in combination with the body images, that's definitely an area of interest, because this had the most activation. So we could use this in comparison to data from actual eating disorder patients if this were carried out again, because clearly we did identify the prefrontal cortex as a main area of interest. So essentially using this and FNIRS in the future to kind of expand on this research is a big possibility.
Yeah.
Also because FNIRS is great. You can carry it around. It's easy to analyze the data.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, no, indeed. And as I'm a kind of nerdy neuroscientist, I also was thinking whether a possible implication or application can be neurofeedback, namely, which is this technique, without going too much into detail, that allows you to modulate a specific brain region using an unrelated task. So in principle, so ideally, we could, if we would find the same in anorexics, for instance, we can teach them to modulate, to decrease the activation of the theory in order to decrease eventually the symptoms of anorexia. That'd be quite interesting. Ellen, wow! Wow, you're not only a scientist, you are also a great communicator. Congratulations.
Thank you. I was very nervous about this, so I'm glad.
You didn't sound like nervous, though. No, very, very nice. Congratulations. Very nice and super cool research. Thanks. All right. So now is the turn of Marie. But what do you think in whether I put some song from the 90s? Unfortunately, from the 90s is more my period than yours, to introduce your topic. Is that a good idea?
Yeah, that sounds good.
Okay, so here we go. So I hope you enjoy a song from by Michael Jackson, I think from 1992, I'm not sure. I think it's that album where Black and White, the song Black and White is. That song. But we're going to listen to another song. It's called Remember the Time, which is perfectly fitting with Marie's topic. And you will know about that in a little while. Enjoy. All right, welcome back to A Bold Scientist on the Show. We're here with two beautiful guests, Ellen and Marie. Ellen already explained us her super cool research. Now it's the turn of Marie. We are all curious to know, first of all, why this song is related to your research. And then I think that the topic of research will come along. Marie.
Yeah, so the song was really fitting because in our research, we investigated when actually episodic memories are formed. And so as a little explanation of episodic memories, yeah. So you probably remember the first sip of coffee you had in the morning or your last summer vacation. And these are all examples of episodic memories. And very general, these are all memories we have about about facts that are specific to ourselves and all the things that we have experienced, basically. And so in our research, we investigated spatial memory, which fits into the category of episodic memories.
Spatial memory, can you make an example of spatial? It's not S-P-E, but the S-P-A-T-I, right? Spatial.
Yes, spatial. So this is basically the memories of where in our environment objects or people are located.
Yeah.
And it helps us to remember where we parked our car after we work, or how do we get to a cafe to meet a friend for coffee.
Marie, just to be clear about this episodic memory. So how, where those memories, those episodic memory are formed?
Yeah, so these episodic memories are formed in the hippocampus, which is a structure right in the middle of your brain, really deep. And it's named after the seahorse because it has a similar shape, which is kind of cute. And in a previous study, they measured the hippocampus. And after every episode, they found that there's a short and really strong increase in activity of the hippocampus. Mm-hmm. And they assumed that this increased activity connects to the formation, the early stages of memory formation.
Great. So just out of curiosity, because we heard from Ellen about FNIRS. So what was the method that they use to measure this early stage of memory formation?
They use EEG.
Okay. Very good, actually. With this cap, right? With a lot of electrodes that measure the electric signal. So we did a lot of, we do a lot of EEG experiment at our university. Good. What did you want to test in your research? Something, I guess, about memory formation.
Yeah, so we wanted to test the exact timing of when memories are actually formed. And therefore, we interfered with the task the participants were doing, and therefore also with their memory of the certain episode.
Yeah, that's very smart because, indeed, interference or lesion study also come up to my mind. I used as an indirect way to, in this case, time a specific cognitive process. It's like, I don't know, I'm studying and I'm distracted by my favorite football team. We can assume is a sort of interference, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Good. And what was your experimental settings? Because you talk about a specific type of episodic memory.
We investigated spatial memory, which fits into the category of episodic memories. And so to investigate this, we used a Morris water maze.
Yeah.
And so a virtual Morris water maze. And so...
Can you briefly explain what the Morris water maze is? The version, because I remember from my studies that the Morris water maze was related to, was employed with rats, right?
Yeah, usually it's done with rats, and these rats are placed into a bucket of water, and then they have to find a hidden platform, which, after some trials, and they use external cues to orient themselves. But obviously we don't throw people into the water. So.
That would be nice, right? A big swimming pool.
Yeah, sometimes. But nice. We used a virtual version of that. So we people had to sit in front of a computer and then navigate within a virtual environment, which kind of looked a bit like Minecraft.
Okay, yeah, I see.
So they had then also find a different platform and learn the locations, and then we interfered with their learning of the locations from the platforms.
Yeah, how did you interfere?
So we introduced a similar task to the navigation task, in which you have to find a platform. And in this different maze, which was the interference task, they had to navigate through two different bars, and they were moving automatically in a very high speed within the maze. And then those bars appeared, and they had to cross a red bar, which looked kind of like a platform, and also avoid the red one. That was, and because both of these tasks are quite similar, that's why they interfere, and
okay.
You remember less.
Okay, see, so you interfere, so probably it's very important for you research question, the time you made this interference, right?
Yes. So that was really important, and we interfered at the exact time when the increased activity in the hippocampus was supposed to happen.
Hey, okay. Which was related to that previous EEG study.
Yeah, exactly. And then to compare this interference, we also had a second interference task, which was delayed. So it was a little bit after the first one. So yeah, at a later time.
But did you also have a no interference?
Yes, we did.
Okay, so then I guess you compare this different interference task with the no interference. And what do you actually find?
Yeah, we indeed found that people in the immediate interference, or people who learned the maze from the immediate interference, they remembered way less the ones from the delayed interference and also the no interference.
Oh, that's cool. So although there was still interference with the delayed one, just changing the timing of the interference interfere with the memory formation.
Yeah, so exactly.
That's cool.
And it's super interesting because, I mean, obviously everything in the brain happens super fast, but it's only a time difference of a really few seconds.
Yeah, therefore.
Yeah.
So, that's cool. So that means that, so the memory is forming really in that specific time point.
Yes, exactly.
So so now that I'm also wondering with my brain, like I did with Ellen, what are the implications? I have few actually in my head, because once again, for the nerdy neuroscientific soul I have, but what are the what is the future? What are the implications? What can I, the next scientist can do with your data?
Yeah, well, first of all, it shows how fragile memory formation actually is, and that we really should pay attention to our study material and not try to get distracted. And it also changes the way we think about memory formation in general, because previously we thought that it happens more in a continuous stream. And right now there's reason to believe that it happens at a specific point in time.
Yeah.
It's really interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, so this is an important knowledge, right? Because I will imagine in a future that if our computer would know, or our, I mean, mobile or whatever tool we use, has this information, so that the brightness of the screen can increase, or I mean, an alarm can go off just to avoid any interference, indeed, or any distraction. Why? It's cool. Thank you very much, Marie. Thanks a lot, really.
You're welcome.
So as you can see, guys, I mean, I'm talking about with the audience. So these two very young students, they manage in only 3 months to run such incredible studies with a lot of that implying a lot of expertise, because they need to program an experiment. Marie was mentioning about this maze that was looking like Minecraft. So they had to program that. They had to, or at least they had to search for a possible and similar type of stimuli that were already programmed. So it's really a multidisciplinary type of activity that takes time and a lot of effort. Therefore, congratulations once again for what you have accomplished. And so both last year with the Research Practical and now, because I had a lot of guests which were, I mean, not even half brilliant as you were. So, I mean, I didn't mention who the guests were, but I mean, it's true. So you were really, really clear and to the point, which is kind of a rare skill to find in also expert scientists. All right, so unfortunately, I need to leave you guys, and I mean everyone else that is listening, with the very last song. So the time flies when you enjoy, and really already one hour has passed. So I thank you very much, and I hope to have you once again as guest when you will become famous scientists. What do you think, guys?
We'll see. But thank you for having us on today, at least.
No, it was my pleasure, really.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Marie. Thank you, Ellen. And I will leave you with a pianist, actually. It's not related neither with neither of those research, but he's a pianist I discovered recently. His name is Jesus Molina. I think it's Chilean. Or probably Brazilian, I don't remember. Anyway, you will find out. And with this amazing song, it's called Choro Meu. And I hope you enjoy, and see you, I think in December, the second Tuesday of the month. And I wish you all a great weekend and a great month. Bye, bye guys. Bye Marie, bye Ellen.